Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show. We've got quite a group up here today. We've got Clyde Lewis up here and with Ground Zero Radio and doing some shooting and checking out the the ships and the orbs and all the other phenomenon that's happening up here at the ranch. We have Michael Knight, who's the co-producer of Contact Has Begun here as well. We've got a lot of things. Before we get to these, to the guests, we want to get to the what's been happening on the planet. There's about 16 major coronal mass ejections have hit in the last 8 days. Now, one in particular, I think it went off at about 5 o'clock yesterday, was so massive that this giant filament came off, and it's headed towards Earth right now. What that means, I don't know, but we're probably going to have some pretty crazy activity. So a little heads up there for people that are going through a lot of processes and, you know, really facing our beasts and our fears and whatever else is coming on. These energies, you know, especially with the 16 coronal mass ejections in a row toppled with this last one, are just going to push things over the edge. So it's real important right now to go within, to do some meditation time, to get really clear, to kind of try to slow things down, settle down with these energies, and be really clear on what's going on outside of yourself versus what's going on inside yourself. You know, we're always looking for a reason why we're agitated or why these energies are coming up or why we're fearful or angry or whatever else, and we're looking for a place to put this energy. But it's very, very important now with the new energies coming in that we learn to just clear this within ourselves, to find that solid ground, you know, that loving detachment, you know, where we're just centered in our own energies, because we are going to be testing on every end. And for those of you, I quick note, we had our sixth court appearance, and the judge was unbelievable. The guy would not acknowledge anything we said. The paperwork, nothing. It was just unbelievable and just went forward, you know, with his agenda. And these are supposed to be third party disinterested people, you know, that are overseeing these things. And unfortunately, we don't have that here in this county. It's about as corrupt as you can get. But they have one agenda, and that's to extort as much money out of people as possible and throw you in jail if you don't pay that extortion, you know. So you know, it's kind of sad, but that's what we've been running into. But anyway, we tested the system, stood up against the system, and, you know, really brought it home. You know, these people have no case. There's an estoppel in place. You know, all of our, you know, it's just basic code violations that they'd love to throw me in jail for. But, you know, the bottom line is that everything's been paid. The permits have been paid. Even the fines have been paid. They haven't responded to any of our information, any of our affidavits. And so basically it's done, you know, legally and on paperwork, it's done. They're done, but they're not going by that. Unfortunately, they have their own agenda and their own rules, and they make them up as they go along. So, it got pretty heated there, and I got to wear the jewelry. I got to wear the contempt bracelets and, for a short time, but, it happened very quickly and the bracelets came off and we were out of there again. So, you know, basically that happens. You know, if you're going to be rocking this world and going up against the big boys and challenging the status quo, you're going to have experiences just like this. You know, unless you're hiding in a cave and eating goji berries, you know, and just focused on love and joy and bliss, which isn't a bad idea right now considering the changes coming in, you're going to have some challenges, and we are definitely having challenges here. But at East SETI. But anyway, you know, it's comes with the territory, and, you know, we're getting through it as best we can, and this whole system is rearing its ugly head on the way down, so. There's an old saying, the closer you get to nirvana, the more the demons rear their ugly heads. And the same thing, too, the more energy coming in to this system and this planetary system, you might say, or this solar system, whatever you want to say, because this is big. You know, this alignment with galactic plane, moving into a highly energized place in space, you know, all of these things going on up to December 21st, the energies come in and are intense. The Pleiadians, in a meditation, I had the Pleiadians come to me, and you never give dates. I try to stay away from dates, but I'm going to give you a little heads up here. On the 16th of September, there's going to be another major shift, a major wave going through of energy, and it's going to be about 2 days on both sides of it, on the front and back of it. So just a little heads up there that you might want to, you know, find a place in nature, get centered in for this shift. These energies are going to come through, and through sympathetic resonance, they're going to shake up the denser energies and cause these other energies to rise up, you know, and some of the negativity to fall away. So it's a good thing, but we just need to be really aware of these energies coming in and be very careful, you know, what we're projecting outside of ourselves and what we need to heal within ourselves. It's a very fine line to work. And you know, what I find out with me is the, you know, I have no control over anybody else. The only thing I have control of is myself and my own emotional body and what I'm experiencing and feeling. I mean, that's it. And all I can do is try to stay calm and stay centered and, you know, hold a frequency and, you know, through these shifts and through these times. And, you know, that's all any of us can do right now is to try to just hold that center and get back to center and focus on what's important, you know, and don't sweat the small stuff. But anyway, that being said, I want to bring some of our guests on. I'm not sure who we've got first on the radio, but maybe we can hook into the landline here to bring on some of the guests. Hello, is anybody with us?
We're here.
Great. Is this Clyde?
That was Clyde, and this is Michael. We're here.
Oh, Michael. Yeah, we'll just go ahead, since you've got the phone, we'll just go ahead and bring you on first.
Well, we're both on at the same time. We're kind of in a room talking to each other. It's a remarkable apparatus we have, and we're very excited to be here today.
Great. Well, hey, we can bring you both on. I wanted to give Michael some kudos there, because Michael has opened up this incredible store, and it's a survival center. He can correct me on that in Portland, give the rest of the information. But, you know, this is perfect timing for this, you know, with these changes coming up and the challenges that people are seeing and grids going down and crazy storms and all the other things going on. But he brought up some beautiful food that was freeze-dried. I think it was a tamale pie that it was just add water. And we cooked it on a
rocket stove.
Yeah, a rocket stove, which he sells.
Little shavings of wood or twigs off a tree. You know, a wonderful little device for if you're in a, you know, it's great for a barbecue cookout. It's also mm-hmm. great to have on hand in case you're in an emergency situation with no power. But my background, real quick, is that I was, as you say, I directed the Contact Has Begun DVD, and John Savage was a producer. It's been a wonderful adventure since then, and I now have a store in Portland called the Portland Preparedness Center. And I'm here with Clyde Lewis, who is now on a national syndication. He's the talk show, the host of the talk show Ground Zero out of Portland, Oregon. That's just gone national in the past week. And on his website, he also has a store of readiness products, preparedness products, at prepareyourgroundzero.com. So this, one of the reasons we are here, aside from spending this evening looking at UFOs and so forth overhead, is to do some promo work for Clyde's new show.
Yeah, and it's remarkable the opportunity that we have, especially the opportunity that I have. Over the years, I've been doing Ground Zero for 17 years, and over the years I've made friends with a lot of people that don't, in my opinion, get a lot of exposure, who are very much in tune with the energy that's here on this planet. And one of those, James, is you. I know you've been on several shows, you've been all over, but I would really like to say that I'm a person who wants to experience the things that I talk about. And one of the places that I always say has the best experience to for energy and revitalizing yourself and recommitting to just being is eSETI. And I'm grateful for this place because, I mean, this whole week has been spent preparing for this show. I'm on now 120 markets. I appear before Coast to Coast AM in most markets. And it's kind of a pairing they did. They did it on purpose because they want me to be like the opening act for Coast to Coast. So a lot of people now know who I am, and it's been a week of stresses, a week of working very hard with this radio show, working with Michael Knight to prepare to do the website, prepareyourgroundzero.com. And we wanted to come out today and demonstrate for everybody how remarkable these products really are and how we all need to be prepared for the changes, the shift changes you've been talking about and always been correct with, James. People need to understand that those who are in tune are trying to send the message out there. And we shouldn't dismiss the messenger. We should continue to be ever vigilant and looking forward to a very bright future, even though we're going to have a lot of storms coming in. And that's something that I really have admired about you for some time, James, is you've been like a weatherman. You've predicted the storms. The storms have rolled in, and many of us have come away unscathed because we paid attention to you and several other people out there that are in tune with what is going on out there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we had last year we went through the snowpocalypse up here, and it was amazing because we were set up for it. We knew it was coming. We were ready. We had our generators going. We had our all of our wood stoves. We had 2 or 3 years worth of woods, you know, put in. And, you know, food and everything else. And so when, you know, all the power lines went down, the trees just snapped in half all up and down the highway. Most of the power poles were out. You know, you couldn't get in or out for a little while. It was just a mess because trees were down everywhere. They had to come and start clearing the trees out because you couldn't even drive on the roads. But, you know, we were nice and cozy here, you know, and we prepared, you know, we had our dried food, we had our stored food, we had our, you know, our heat, you know, our water, you know, everything. It was like, so what, you know, nothing happened, you know, to us. But, you know, a lot of people were unprepared and you know, and it wasn't fun. It was terrible. They had no power. All they had was electric heat and they had to open up schools and things like that just to get people in there. Just so they didn't freeze to death and because they didn't pay attention. So, you know, as you said, I'm not here to promote fear or doom and gloom or anything else. I really want to save people as much trauma as possible and assist people to get through these changes. And this isn't prophecy anymore. It's not a prediction. This is science. You know, it's here.
Science is also telling us, and reality is telling us, that in the past couple of years, we've had a tremendous number of superstorms around the planet. Now, when we were making the documentary, you referred to the sun and its activity, and honestly, I think you were at least 5 years ahead of your time, and you'd had that information within you for the previous 10 years. The situation now is that the sun is going into the peak of its solar cycle 24. And when you talk about new energy coming in on the 16th, I have a feeling or a sense that the sun itself is beginning to ramp up again. And the weather on this planet is affected, as we know, by everything within the solar system, whether it's Planet X or the sun and so forth. Now, what's happening is the jet stream is changing its route around the world. Now, come fall, I suspect it's going to drop down into the Pacific Northwest, and we could have some really major issues. Preparedness is my business now. The store is my business, and helping people get prepared is what I do. But the information that precedes their action is what's most important, and that's where people like you and Clyde have been so helpful to people around the world, or at least listening to these shows.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. You know, it's interesting, too, is that, you know, in the movie, we, you know, the special effects you guys came up with in Contact Has Begun, especially the near-death experience and the solar activity and all of that, it just blew me away after I saw it. I just, you know, I had so many people wanting to do a movie about this, you know, about the ranch and Contact and my life story. And And I turned down, I mean, I had checks sitting on the wall for like $300,000 that I never cashed and didn't involve myself in Hollywood. And I kept waiting for the right producers to come. And, you know, I guess economically it was probably one of the lamest things I could have ever done. But it's not about the money. It never was. It's about getting the real story out and the truth out. So, you know, kudos to you guys, because it's awesome to have, you know, some enlightened producers come up that know what's going on. And, you know, you got to witness the ships yourself and got to see the contacts and a lot of other phenomenon as well during the shoot.
Well, you know, as I don't know if you know this or not, I was sharing this with Nate and with Michael. My experience with the East City Ranch has a very important, it's an important milestone in my life. I came up here with a friend of mine named David Smith a while ago. It was back in 2007. And I came here, and in one of the rooms where I was sleeping, I had a visitation from a being. It was a female being with blue skin. And she told me, she said that I needed to prepare myself because I needed to go to the doctor. And I didn't know what that meant, but I figured, okay, I need to go to the doctor. She just warned me that I needed to see the doctor and watch my health. So what had happened is after I had left here, I was preparing to do an investigation in the Maury Island affair. I had a friend of mine who wanted to have a camera crew set up at Vashon Island. We were going to do a new documentary because they found the aircraft that was carrying some of the, what they call the sludge from a craft that was, I guess, going to crash at Maury Island. So we had this new revelation that we wanted to explore and expose. Well, after I left East City and I was about to go to the doctors and talk to the doctors, I actually collapsed while doing the documentary. And for 36 hours, I was out. I wasn't in a coma. I was sleeping. I was so exhausted, I slept. And when I awoke, the doctors came in. They had a diagram, and they said to me, you have double renal cell carcinoma, and you could die. And we're thinking that we need to immediately go in and do the operation. For the longest time, I knew I had tumors, and I had other things because I have a condition that's it's a medical condition. It's actually a genetic condition. It makes me prone to these things, and I had no idea that I'd be prone to cancer, but to have double renal cell carcinoma and to have five tumors of different molecular structures was almost unheard of by the doctors. It was almost a miracle they were able to get all the cancer out of me, and now I'm cancer-free, and here I am back and waiting for another enlightening and enriching experience, because that's exactly what you get here at East City. And I don't know why, you know, more and more people don't realize that this is the place to find that feeling. Tonight, when we arrived here, I was feeling what I can only call as electric worms, tingling sensations throughout my body. The energy here is just amazing, and we're up here with Northwest Ghost Recon. Roger Clutton and his son are here, and they were taking pictures, and Roger snapped this gorgeous picture of the ranch right above the mountain, and it looks like the sun's coming up over Mount Adams. And there's no sun that comes up over Mount Adams, and there's pink, there's this huge pink energy over the whole entire mountain, and I just think it's amazing that pink energy is what we're feeling here today.
Yeah, it's that divine feminine energy that it's very healing, you know, nurturing energy, and you know the whole ranch is just tingling with it. And if you take a picture up, you know, it's over the ranch. It's amazing. The other thing, you know, it's funny, though. I'm curious, too. I mean, you brought that up. I wonder why some of these other talk show hosts are not covering this, that actually are some of the, you know, the apex of the talk show hosts are not coming out here and checking this out and covering it, and the UFO investigators and the people that have the major conferences. This, you know, ESETI is just the null zone. You know, it doesn't exist for these people, and they know about it. I mean, they've been overwhelmed with letters and photos and people having amazing experiences up here and things like that. But you know, there's a consistent effort to make sure that it's not covered. I'm curious if you had any ideas on maybe why that might be.
I would say, and from what I know now that I'm in a situation where I'm in a major talk radio network, There's a lot of, I guess there's a lot of scuttlebutt or murmuring about how the way this whole field of the paranormal and the supernatural and all the areas that this covers, how it's been handled with mainstream talk. And I think that's one of the reasons why they've given me the opportunity, is because I am the type of person who will go out to places like East Eddy. I've known you, James, for a long time, and I know you're a straight shooter. I remember when you spoke at the UFO Museum in Portland, and I remember a few of my listeners were there, and they came up to me after you spoke, and they go, "This guy really is the real deal, isn't he?" And I said, "Of course he is." I go, "He is the real deal. This man is amazing." And I said, you know, there should be more and more people coming to the East City Ranch. This would be like the new Area 51, but here you won't be shot if you decide to go view UFOs. You can come here, and it's a peaceful area. You can lay back with the nice cool breeze from the mountain on you, and you look up in the sky and you see these beautiful orbs, these beautiful beam ships firing up. I saw a ballet of beautiful lights when I was here. I've seen black triangles in the sky during the daytime. It's an amazing, it's an amazing place to be, and it's not just for the UFOs, but it's for the energy, it's for the friendship and fellowship, it's the people here. I mean, people you don't even know, they talk with you as if they've known you for years. And this is what you get. It's a joyous place to be, and it's the setting, it's the beauty. It's like you're living in a postcard, but with UFOs and everything else attached to it. So it's an amazing experience for me. So I'm going to talk about it, and of course, have you on the air a lot, James, because you're an amazing person.
Hey, James, I have a question for you.
This is Roger Clinton from Northwest Coast Recon. He's in here with us.
James, I have a question. Is Mount Adams intersecting on the ley lines of the Earth?
Yeah, actually, there's a major ley line that runs right through this property, and it goes right to the mountain. And, it's definitely a major intersect. Also, too, what's interesting here, if you throw a big rock up and let it hit the ground, you'll hear this hollow noise, you know. And so we're riddled with caves and lava tubes underneath us. It's just a whole system of caves underneath us as well. So they did ground penetrating radar here, and they found out that there's massive caverns underneath us, and those caverns are actually, there's some strange things moving around underneath us in those giant caverns. So my take on it is this, there's just a massive underground base here that has been remote viewed by some of the best people, and Bob Dean was just here, Robert Dean. And he did some remote viewing on it, and he said, boy, there's quite a group in that mountain. And he said, it's not just one group, it's quite a few groups, and they're all working together to, you know, assist in this process we're going through. So I thought that was quite amazing. And we have footage of a door actually opening on the mountain and objects coming out of it, you know, everything from ships to light beams.
So the mountain could possibly be one giant crystal then underneath.
Well, the Native Americans say there's a large crystalline city underneath with some extremely advanced beings that they used to take their sick or wounded up, and they would take them. These beings would come out and they would take them into the mountain and bring them back in a very short time, just completely healed with, you know, broken bones, everything. It's amazing. But, you know, there's a lot of legends about the beings that live inside there and how advanced they are.
That would explain the feelings that I got as soon as I got here. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was just being healed just walking onto the property.
Yeah, we've had crazy things happen where broken wrists have mended overnight, tumors have disappeared, you know, bleeding ulcers just stopped and healed. And, you know, with x-rays, fully documented. So, things happen here, but, you know, I can't say everybody that comes here is going to get healed, but some people have just total miracle healings here.
Well, I think what I've gathered, because I've been to several areas here in Oregon, I mean, one of the places where I've been where there's actually, I feel, some sort of a vortex is Warrenton, which is in the northern area of, northern Oregon near Astoria, and I actually... I felt what a vortex is like there, and I remember the same feeling I had there is the same feeling I have here. So I would feel, and I would definitely attest to the fact that what is happening here is that we have a major vortex above your ranch and above this area, and I think that's why people feel the way they do. I think that's why we have the energy that we do. And so I would say that, you know, it's here for the healing. It's here for the fellowship. It's here for the spirit that is here, the spirits that do come and go here. It's almost like a portal or a stargate here where you never know what you're going to encounter or come in contact with. You never know what messages you're going to walk out with. You never know what the experience is going to be. It's always a new experience when you come here, and that is why, you know, you bring in with you your the way you feel, but you take out a very powerful and enlightening feeling, and it's always been that way since I've been here. And in fact, it was so funny. I was actually so excited to come here this time because I hadn't been here in so long, because I was just remembering the feeling. You never forget the feeling you get when you're here at E-City.
Yeah, there's definitely an opening here and a portal above. And I think that might be why. And you can actually, if you relax your eyes, you can see this massive opening. And the higher beings call this a stargate. They call it E-City Stargate. And you know, Mel Fabregas was here. I thought this was interesting. And he told it on his show, and he said I could talk about it. But he came and went through our transpersonal release session where he really plugged into his guides. And he went to Sedona, Arizona. And there's a woman there that's very tapped in, you know, very tapped in. She said, hey, there's a being, a woman, standing here, and she's a, you know, a six-dimensional being, and she's from the Orion Council of Light, and she's saying that you met her at the E-SETI Stargate, and he gave the name, she gave the name of this being, the exact same name that we gave him in the counseling work, or that, you know, helped him hook up with him, so... I thought that was amazing that they referred to this place as the E-SETI Stargate.
Well, Mel Fabregas would know. His Veritas show is amazing, and I'm a big fan of his. I actually had a chance to work with him for a short period of time, but yet I have nothing but respect for Mel, and he's another one of those types of talk show hosts that like to come in and experience and like to walk away. He's one of the knowledgeable ones. He wants to really give his best and the extra mile to his shows. I mean, Veritas is one of the best online shows out there. It really is.
Very discerning, too, which I like. You know, when he came here and he started seeing the orbs and everything else, he tried to discount and really look into it. Okay, how can this? And we showed him the technology we were using and everything, and that blew his mind. But when he started seeing the ships come in, over and over and power up and respond to people in turn, you know, he had no doubt whatsoever when he left that, you know, this is the real thing. And so, you know, I tell people, yeah, keep your discernment, you know, never lose your discernment. But at what point do you have to just say, okay, you know, this is obvious, you know, these are unknowns, you know.
James, I'd like to go back, if I may, to the DVD, Contact Has Begun. I come from New Zealand, and the media down there is a little more open to the idea of UFOs than I've found here in the States or when I've been to Britain or Australia. But one of the reasons, I think, why mainstream talk show people and so forth don't give you cred, I think that's an American word, isn't it?
Yeah.
is skepticism. Journalists by nature are cynics and skeptical. And they also have an ego, you know, they're pompous in themselves. I used to be one, so, you know, things have changed. But when we were researching to do a documentary, when John and I were looking around for a documentary to make, we came to your place to do some research, and the underlying thought was, James has something going on there which is worth investigating. It'd be great to find somebody who tells the truth, who lives the truth, but let's go and check him out. Well, we came here and we slept out overnight, and you showed us the first night that there were UFOs coming over and they would do what you call a power-up, which is, you know, just like a dimmer light getting brighter and not so bright. We slept out that night, and outside there under Mount Adams, under the stars, I woke up pretty early in the morning, and saw one of these craft coming across, and you'd said to us you could communicate with them telepathically. So I communicated telepathically, which was totally new to me, and it did a power up. It just, you know, became a huge ball of light, and then it diminished. And John was, you know, just not too far away, also sleeping up. He saw this happen, and he had this dinky little digital camera, the sort you buy at Walmart, you know, the very small ones that fit in your pocket. And he pulled it out, and he pointed it up into the sky, and there's this thing flying across at about 40, 50,000 feet, maybe 100,000 feet, who knows. And he flashed his camera, and this thing flashed back. And he did it three times, and it flashed back three times. Now, it takes experience, you know, to convince a person. And that was the sort of experience that convinced us that this was a documentary worth making. And to be truthful with you, although I haven't been here for several years, I know that that documentary has sold very well around the world, and it has changed a lot of people's lives. And now that Clyde is taking it on board with his Ground Zero talk show, I'm certain that its time has come, so to speak, and it's going to change a lot more lives as well.
Yeah, it's time. It was ahead of its time, and I don't think people were ready for it. But now all the things in that documentary are manifesting, you know, and people can't argue the manifestations. And what's, I think what's interesting is this same story I've been telling since 1982 about the earth changes and the expanding sun and the erratic weather and the fires that were going to be coming and you know, all of this, the tsunamis and the escalation of earthquakes. We gave all this information out back in 1982, and nobody wanted to hear about it, including the San Francisco earthquake. We gave the exact date and time of that before it hit. But it's pretty. You can't deny it anymore. It's not prophecy. It's not woo woo. It's science.
Well, it is. It's, a lot of people are now trying to combine, and I've noticed this with my shows lately, they want to combine technology with magic. They want to discredit the idea that there's anything supernatural that can all be explained away by science. And maybe a lot of things can be explained away by science, but I always tell people it's infinite universe. Why put yourself in a finite mindset, a rigid mindset, when there's so many infinite and wonderful things that can be explored, so many experiences that can be had. I think a lot of people are of the opinion that they can't have these experiences. A lot of people have the opinion that they're not worthy to have these experiences. You hand out experiences all the time at the ranch. Anything from viewing orbs in the sky firing up to meditation exercises. And this my friend David called me and he said there was something that he did here where he realized he had all these lives and all these things going on inside of him, and that he was cleansed of all of it. Now he feels so free and so wonderful. And that's the thing, is that this is almost like it's a shop for the soul. You know, if you want to do some soul searching, come here. If you want to see UFOs, come here. If you want to be one with nature, come here. If you want to jump in a river naked, come here. I mean, it's beautiful. It's wonderful. I don't know if anybody jumps in rivers naked, but I've been told to jump in the river naked. But I'm not going to do that because I don't want to scare off, you know, anybody. They'll probably think I'm Bigfoot. You know what happens to people who pretend to be Bigfoot anymore? They get run over by cars. But I just think that, you know, more and more people need to discover this. I think that when we look at all the other talk show hosts that claim that they're, I guess, workers in the light, we know who workers in the light are, those who aren't afraid of the light, those who go beyond the light of a studio and want to play in real light, real energy, and real love, real hope, real change. And like you say, you know, I have had so many people in the past week say that they're seeing demons. They're seeing flying creatures. They're seeing flying winged creatures. One was sighted over Puerto Rico prior to Tropical Storm Isaac forming. It was a flying gargoyle, they called it. It looked like a cross between Azazel and Pazuzu, the winged demon of the wind. And I was talking about these winged demons. I do it not because I want to scare people. I do it because you need to recognize the difference between a winged demon and an angel, a spirit that is here to help, guide, and protect, other than a spirit that's here to spread pestilence, drought, and famine. And we are in a time now where we're heading for that. We're heading for drought and famine. We hear of pestilence with West Nile. We know that the plagues are coming with more flus this year. It's going to be a very, very trying time for a lot of people. And unless we're prepared both with food and prepared spiritually, the apocalypse is going to happen on a spiritual level first. It happens on a spiritual level before it ever will happen in a material world. Armageddon happens inside of you before it ever happens in the outside world. What is coming at us comes from within us. And if we allow ourselves to be overtaken by the corruption, if we allow ourselves to be overtaken by what is known as the demonic forces, the dark forces, the spiritually wicked in high places, what they call them, we let those things influence our decision, and we don't enrich ourselves enough, we're going to find ourselves in a very, very, very dark and lonely place. And that's why I think it's important to take in the light rather than just say you're taking it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, what I really like about, you know, most of the people like you, Clyde and Michael and John, you know, you're all authentic. I mean, you don't profess to be anything other than what you are, and you're down to earth and you're authentic, and you're going to cover things and not afraid to talk about things, and you know, not afraid to say, hey, this is nonsense too, if it is nonsense. And my hat's off to you, because you do get in there and cover the things that need to be covered, and you don't really care if mainstream media is going to, you know, give you a pat on the back or you know, support what you're doing. But it does seem now that the people want to hear about these things, and now mainstream is getting behind it. And we have more mainstream press here covering what's happening here at the ranch than we do the UFO community, which is ridiculous.
Well, this means you're reaching a bigger audience. And I think what's happening around the world now is so in your face that the mainstream people cannot ignore it. With the situation of America being 60% of this country in drought conditions right now. Wheat crops, corn crops, in totally poor condition. Now, imagine if you had a garden that was supposed to provide you with your year's food supply, and suddenly 60% of it went away. That equates to 7 months without food. Mm-hmm. When you put it in that light, America is about to go into total food shortage and famine. And this is, I think, one of the reasons why, for whatever reason, the Contact has begun, has come forward again. Clyde has got his national program, and the emphasis, not just in Clyde's show, but and not just in my business, but I've seen other talk shows beginning to talk about being prepared. And it's critical, while we're being distracted by thoughts of Israel bombing Iran and America going into Syria, those are actual distractions, and I almost think they're deliberately employed to keep us from thinking about what are the critical issues.
The word that Michael used today was banal. And I agree with him. The banality of the mainstream news. I don't know how many times when I was doing my show the past few days, maybe I guess yesterday to be exact, I was doing my show. We have news monitors. We cover CNN. We cover Fox. We have MSNBC. We have all of these news organizations on our monitors. I don't know how many times I saw Clint Eastwood talking to a chair and having them make fun of it and continue to do it. It got more coverage than Neil Armstrong's death, who allegedly walked on the moon back in 69. We're looking at Obamacare instead of Obamacare. We're looking at that, and I'm laughing, thinking, how silly are we? Are we just focusing on this aging actor talking to a chair, making fun of it, and asking the audience if it hurt Mitt Romney or helped Mitt Romney? Mitt Romney. I thought, I don't care. I just don't care. I mean, you take a look at the candidates anymore, they all sound like Star Wars characters. I mean, you got a Newt and a Mitt and an Obama. I mean, that just sounds like somebody that would be in Jabba the Hutt's place. I don't understand the world anymore. So what am I going to do? I want to talk about things like the East City Ranch. I want to talk about things like You know, just yesterday we were talking about the bloodlines and how they influence us and how the elites run the world, and having esoteric conversations about the Moors, an esoteric conversation about the Garden of Eden and Jesus and everything else, while having a romanticized version of what religion's all about, but more of a hardline faith rather than this romanticized version. We've got to have this hardline faith of just who are the spiritual elders that are guiding this planet, protecting it. And we also need to be aware of those demons and darker entities that are trying to hijack the wheel and steer this starship known as Earth out of the way of the, I guess, of the straight and narrow, or whatever you want to call it, the pathway of light. And I just, it just frustrates me. So I have to resort to doing these shows like this, where I'm actually trying to expand minds rather than having them go into entropy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, the good news is what, from my information I've been getting, and this is a combination of science and telepathic contact, is that the bottom line is all of these things that have been going on for so long are no longer frequency specific to where the Earth is evolving to. And so they are going to eventually implode on themselves. The, you know, the powers that were are crumbling as we speak. Their empires are crumbling. You know, the nature is kicking butt right now. She's doing her things. You know, everything seems to be exposed right now. You know, everything is coming up to the surface. All the stuff that we would never even talk about or didn't want to talk about is all coming to the surface. You know, you look at the, you know, the Occupy movements and all of these other things going on. I just don't see any way that this New World Order, whatever you want to call it, the powers that were, can't continue, you know, underneath this mass awakening and the energies that are coming in that are going right down to the atom itself. There's nowhere to hide from this shift. And I always tell people, you know, hey, guess what? You know, you're going to go underground with a bunch of control freaks that are tyrants. And when the energy comes in, you know, why do you think they're tyrants? Because they're extremely fearful. And when all those fears get activated and they go bonkers down there, do you really want to be in a hole with the same people? You know, it's like...
I certainly don't.
There's nowhere to go.
You know, James, I've done a lot of research over the years, and now I tend to focus on what's going on with the planet itself. I grew up in a very small town, and, you know, to me, an adventure in a day was to just walk 5 miles out of where my house was. Today, an adventure is to look at what's going on the entire planet. And it seems to me that this planet, they can call it Gaia or Terra or whatever you like, but it's Mother Earth. And Mother Earth is a bit pissed off, I think. And she's about to smack a few of the bad boys.
Yeah.
Mother Earth has these tectonic plates which have been grinding against each other and creating volcanoes are erupting all around the world now. Magnitude 6 earthquake that used to be front page news when I was in newspapers and radio back in New Zealand. If ever there was a magnitude 6 earthquake anywhere in the world, it was on the front page. We have had at least 10 magnitude 6 earthquakes in the past month. They're just increasing all the time. Now, what this tells us, and I believe everybody should be aware of, is that the planet itself is building to a sort of a crisis moment. As far as we're concerned, not as far as the planet's concerned, it's gone through these convulsions in the past, that it has to heal itself. How can it heal itself from nuclear power plants? How can it heal itself from pollution in the oceans? How can it heal itself from oil that's just spilled everywhere all the time?
What about fracking? We can't forget about fracking, how they force the mantles to crack. People can ignite their water now. It's got gas flowing through. You turn on your faucet, you can put a lighter underneath it, and set it on fire. This is what they're doing to the environment, not to mention CERN, when they slammed those atoms together to create the Higgs boson. I mean, what if a strangelet gets into the planet, goes into the core? That'll cause all kinds of havoc, cause volcanoes to go crazy. It'll even cause the sun to go nuts. I wouldn't be surprised if when they were screwing around with all those high-charged particles that they haven't caused any kind of disruptions underneath the Earth, because you're actually creating a photon star underneath the planet, and you're exploding it. And this, and they don't think that's going to cause any, you know, repercussions. I think it will, and I think it is. I think we're seeing them.
And here's a point and a thought that just comes to mind in terms of research. We should all be doing our own research. Don't rely on what I say for being the truth. Just go look at and search out what you need to know. But I'd suggest that people have a look at a guy by the name of Patrick Gale. That's G-E-Y-L. He has a website. He's a scientist beyond and outside the mainstream of science, just as you and Clyde and perhaps myself are outside the mainstream of news media. But, hey, we're just light years ahead of where they're at. And Patrick Gale has this website where scientific-type people will begin to see how he connects earthquakes to sun activity to the alignment of planets. It's not something I fully understand, but I know that there are people with really good scientific minds who would find that sort of meaningful.
Yeah, definitely. The, you know, for years, it's funny, it's kind of hilarious because I went on Mitch Batros' show long in the very beginning when he just had a radio show. And I told him that, you know, when the sun goes off like it does, you know, it creates an increase in the bioelectric fields around the body, which puts people into emotional process. You know, it creates a quickening or an agitation energy. And then it also creates, you know, erratic weather. And an increase in earthquake and volcanic activity. And, you know, and I talked about the giant triangle ships that are going to start appearing around the world and a lot of other things on there. But but now it's part of his equation, you know. It's, you know, it's funny because we've been given this equation since the, you know, early 80s, I think 82. And it's just finally hitting mainstream where people are taking it seriously.
Well, you notice over the years that scientists tend to say that this earthquake is not connected to that earthquake and this volcanic eruption has got nothing to do with that volcanic eruption because, you know, they're miles away and years apart. But I put it this way. If you stub your toe and your eyes water and then you say they're not connected, now let's get real. The planet is a holistic being. The planet has to evolve. And I think we've been standing in the way.
It's overheating.
And maybe the planet has decided it's time to off a few of us.
Yeah, it's definitely going in that direction. You know, and I'm finding out a lot of people say, you know, you make a comment like that, and people go, you're a doom and gloomer, you're negative, you're this, you're that. But I'm going to continue in my present lifestyle, you know, driving my SUV and my gas guzzler and gas consumer and, you know, yada, 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 because I don't want to experience any change. And so I'm just going to put you in the doom and gloomer, fanatical conspiracy nutcase box, you know, so I don't have to take responsibility and do what's necessary to change my life and simplify and adapt, you know, to what's going on. Because, you know, this does threaten people in their basic comfort zones, you know. So
I used to get upset when people would call me a doom and gloomer and switch off from the newsletters. And then I realized that what I do, and what I have done for many, many years is look at the world as objectively as I can. And as a journalist, which is what I was, one's intent is to present information. What people do with that information is their choice. But when they say that, oh, you're just doing doom and gloom, it's because the way the human brain operates, they're taking in this information and it's promoting within them a sense of fear. And fear has a way of either turning you into fighting or running away. And when imagery gets in the mind that is frightening, a person can switch off that image and then start going after the messenger. That they're irrational, but that's honestly the way it is. You just got to love them and let them carry on.
I think people overall find themselves in a situation of plausible deniability. If you don't get in their face about what's coming and they can ignore you or say you're a doomer and gloomer, it's because they want to remain in their denial. And that's why they do it, is because, you know, look, when I had cancer, I didn't think that I had it. I didn't feel like I had it until I collapsed. And that's the whole point, is that you're in denial, you're in denial, you're in denial, and you say to yourself, oh, quit it. It's something, quit being negative. That's doom and gloom. I don't want to think about the end. I don't want to think about that, you know, I could stop breathing tomorrow. But the truth of the matter is, that's how it is. You know, we need to be prepared for those emergencies. And I just think most people want to get away with plausible deniability. I mean, hey, the elite do. Your presidential candidates do. Barack Obama wants plausible deniability. He doesn't want to take the blame for anything or accountability for anything. He doesn't want to talk about how, you know, he continued the Bush doctrines. He's tapping phones and he's doing all the things that Bush was doing. We're still at war. I mean, but we got to give him another 4 years to see if he's going to do anything better. And I'm like thinking to myself, okay, I guess, you know, he's a good used car salesman, but I'm not even too thrilled about Mitt Romney either. So what do we do about that? I know what we do about that. We rely on ourselves. We kick the problem of deniability and we say, look, we can handle this. We don't need daddy up in Washington to tell us what to do. We know what to do. We know what's right. Our pocketbook tells us where we spend our money and what we like. We know that there are beings out there looking at us. We don't need a government to tell us. We don't need disclosure. I don't need Barack Obama to get up and make fun of me because I believe in extraterrestrials. I don't want him to make jokes about Martians being on Mars with curiosities roaming around the area. I don't want this whole ignorance of the space program when we went to the moon allegedly back in 1969. You know, if we did, then why is it we don't treat it like what Cronkite said, the greatest event in our history, where man left this planet to touch the soil of an extraterrestrial sphere. It isn't important anymore. It doesn't capture the attention of anyone. Why? Because I think a lot of people deep down lack the faith necessary to continue the progression. They want the deniability. They want to continue to be in denial. But when it all comes down to at the end is just you and your 6 feet of comfort that you have decided to invest in because you don't want to live. You just want to curl up and die. Well, go have your 6 feet of comfort. Go crawl in your little box. Instead, think outside that box to avoid being in that box. That's what I think.
Yeah, it's definitely a good one. They definitely have a box for us, and that box is going to end up being buried 6 feet under if we don't start paying attention. You know, but I think we're going to have to.
All men are created equal when they're 6 feet under. You know that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the way things are, most people tend to wind up 6 feet under. But between now and then, isn't the journey about becoming more open-minded, knowing more about what you don't know, rather than being the same as you were when you were a teenager for the rest of your life? Isn't it about getting beyond the concepts and the dogma that we're given into our teens and so forth? Some people hold on to those beliefs until they get to the six-foot box. I think I have a sense or a feeling, and this is just a sense or a feeling, that you guys talk about light and light workers and energies and so forth. I honestly have this feeling that this is a seminal moment in the history of this particular civilization, this particular world. There is an enlightening thing going on, and it's humbling to know that we're actually part of that part of the journey that this planet is on. I'm going to stop now because...
Well, I mean, it's true that, you know, in our lives anymore, people are still in high school. You know, a lot of people haven't graduated from high school, and many people who have graduated in high school remain sophomores to life most of their lives. I'm still a sophomore at life. I can't figure it out. But what helps you get beyond being a sophomore is becoming a junior and a senior and an associate and a master in life studies. And when you find out what life is all about, as Michael said, it's about the journey. Arriving sucks because then you have to figure out what you do once you arrive. I like the fact that I'm always moving. I like the fact that I'm always journeying. I like the fact that I'm always finding new and interesting people to talk to. And this is what makes life great. Other people are just like, they're just happy, you know, sitting there watching Snooki on Jersey Shore or whoever Snooki is. I mean, I can't even figure out who Snooki is. My life is so enriched. I hear that name, I don't even know who that is. I don't even know who most of these pseudo-celebrities are when I see their faces. I just heard their names, and I'm thinking, once again, another Star Wars character. So now you have Myth, you have Newt, You have Obama and you have Snooki. I mean, come on, what's next? You know, Bert and Ernie and the count, what?
There's Kim. Kim Kardashian.
Oh, yeah, okay, and a Kardashian. That's like a Star Trek character. You have the Klingons, the Romulans, and the Kardashians. You see, the world is just so funny. It's like a bad science fiction B-movie extravaganza, and I think more people need to wake up and see it for what it is.
Well, you forgot Bruce Jenner with the bad face lift.
Yeah, exactly, something like that.
He made off with everybody's money, and then you've got, what is it, what's that guy, Wiener?
Yeah, Wiener. There's the guy who lived up to his namesake.
Isn't he about 6 foot tall?
Yeah, lying down.
You know, one thing I've heard, the rationale from the Palladians, you know, to leave this on a good note, basically, is they've made it very clear, and they're saying, you know, it's time to lovingly and joyously prepare on every level, not just, you know, don't do it out of fear, do it out of love, love for yourself, your family, your neighbor. You know, it's time, and they talk about making your own personal creator, God, spirit connection, whatever that is. Get out in nature and start listening to nature and listen to what nature's going to do. I mean, she'll tell you what she's going to do in that area if you stop and tune into her. And, you know, and they talk about releasing the past. We have to release the past, let go of all the old wounds and traumas and the unforgiveness and start being kind to each other and the planet. But, you know, that's the bottom line. It's got to start moving in that direction, and we're going to get a lot of spanking along the way if we don't. I mean, that's just the way of the universe.
There's something that I do, James, which has given comfort to me, is to see people, and I tell this to my children, look people in the eye, see beyond the personality, and you're looking at an entity who is a soul and a spirit on an eternal journey. And you've got to love them for the courage that they have. Just love them.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. You know, before we sign off here, we're at the end of the hour. What's the best way to get a hold of you, Michael, and your Preparedness Center? And then we'll bring Clyde on, and he can tell us how we can get in touch with and watch his radio show on his website.
Our website is GetReadyPortland.com, as in GetReadyPortland.com.
Yeah.
Sounds good. And Clay, what's the best way people can hear your shows and get in touch with you?
I'm on 121 markets across the country now. We are on before Coast to Coast AM in most markets. You can go to my website at groundzeromedia.org. And if you want to prepare yourself, you just go to prepareyourgroundzero.com, and there you'll be able to pick up some of the wonderful things we were demonstrating today at East SETI, the stoves, the food, all those great things that it was all surprising to most people. They were very excited. I don't know how many times, James, I've received thank yous from listeners saying, thank you for this program, thank you for this program. And I want to tell them, because I know there are a lot of people that know who you are who listen to my show, thank you for appreciating what we're doing. Thank you for being out there and supporting my show and James and everyone else in all these years. Just thank you, because now, believe it or not, we have this opportunity. Let's not take it for granted. It's time. It is time. Contact has begun, not just contact with those beings out there, but contact with each other, because we are together a brotherhood of mankind. It is supposed to save ourselves and Mother Nature for future and for children and for everyone who loves and appreciates what gifts this beautiful world gives us.
Hey, you can also find Clyde on KXL.com. It's 101 FM in Portland, but KXL.com on the Internet will get you live streaming anywhere in the world.
Great.
And he's on air from 7 to midnight Pacific time. That's American Pacific time.
I'm also on XM channel 168, I found out as well. So if you have satellite radio, you can get me on 168 XM channel.
Hey, well, again, guys, thanks a lot for coming on the show. We're out of time. We've got to switch over to the second half. And so, again, thank you so much for coming on the show, and good luck in your journeys, and I'm sure I'll be on your show soon.
Yes, you will. We'll see you soon.
Well, we're coming into the second hour, folks. We've got Judy Wood, and, you know, information is impeccable. So I hope you stay to listen to this, and awesome show coming up. Check it out, and we'll see you next week. Greetings. This is James Gillen. I'm your host. We've got another great show. We've got Dr. Judy Wood, and she's the author of the book, Where Did the Towers Go? Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 911. Dr. Wood started to question the events of 911 on the same day when what she saw and heard on television was contradictory and appeared to violate the laws of physics. Since that day, she's used her knowledge of engineering mechanics to prove that the collapse of the World Trade Center Twin Towers could not have happened as American public was told. Dr. Judy Wood earned a PhD degree from Virginia Tech and is a former professor of mechanical engineering. She has a research expertise in experimental stress analysis, structural mechanics, deformation analysis, materials characterization, and materials engineering science. And if you want to check out more about her information, you can go to drjudywood.com. And get more information on that. So without any further ado, we want to welcome Judy on the show. Judy, are you with us?
Yes, hello.
Can we call you Judy, or should I use Dr. Wood?
Which you prefer.
I like Judy.
Okay.
I like you.
The problem with that often is, you know, in this context, it's okay, but often it's when folks mix that with Dr. So-and-so, there's Judy and Dr. So-and-so.
Oh, yeah.
There's these hidden messages that often go on.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, whatever you think is appropriate, we can call you Dr. Wood.
Sure.
But what's interesting is I wanted to share a quick little story before we get into this. And what was interesting is I had a group of Native Americans here at the ranch, and they were doing a conference, a Star Knowledge conference. And we were out sitting by the fire the night before this event happened. And several of them, we were just talking, staring at the fire, and all of a sudden one of them got very upset. And they said, they did it. And we said, did what? And they said, there's buildings being blown up. They're going down. I'm seeing buildings going down. They said, we did it. We did it to ourselves. And that was what was coming out of this man. He was a Cherokee elder, and you know, I just passed it off at the time. I said, well, I don't know what he's talking about. You know, I have no idea what he's talking about, but you know, he had a total vision of the event and everything and saw it. And then that morning, you know, we all over the news was, you know, the Twin Towers being blown up and knocked down.
So that was the night before?
Yeah, the night before. So I thought that was pretty amazing, you know, that this guy, what he said was, we did it. We did it to ourselves. And that was coming from a spiritual vision. That was the information he got on a spiritual level, and which ties into exactly what, you know, your book talks about as well. So I thought that was kind of fascinating.
Right. And there's a Native American in Montana. Mm-hmm. That within a few days of that wrote an article in the Billings Gazette, and it was just a beautiful article, and the title of it was "We're All Native Americans Today." Mm-hmm. And in there was the statement, "Terrorism is not new to American soil, nor is our government a stranger to it."
Yeah.
And yeah, then he put a parallel with the Baker Massacre. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
See how that is.
Yeah, it is funny how they figured it out right up front, because they've had a long history of being terrorized, you know. So
right.
You know, but I shouldn't say they, because I'm like part Cherokee myself, but just as a descriptive means, the Twin Towers. Now, my understanding, when I first saw that event and I saw the towers go down, you know, and just the dustification is what you call it. I, I just could not wrap my head around a plane taking these towers down, or two planes. It just did not make sense the way they fell. And I know you've probably told this story over and over again to, you know, millions of people, but I'd love to get just, maybe we can start from there on why this wasn't an event that was done by, you know, a couple guys with towels on their heads, you know, with box cutters.
Well, that is an excellent place to start. As I say, the towers didn't burn up, nor did they slam to the ground. Mm-hmm. They turned into dust in midair. And we know this because if they'd slammed to the ground, you'd see a pile of rubble left over. Mm-hmm. Didn't happen. They slammed to the ground, the seismic signal would have reflected that. Didn't happen. And if they'd slammed to the ground, lower Manhattan would have been flooded, because the towers were built on bedrock 70 feet below the water table out in the Hudson River with a dike around them. Mm-hmm. And if you dropped a million tons of junk on the dike, it would have ruptured. Didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, there's lots of different pieces of evidence that tell us what happened. But the big question is, how were so many people deceived on 9/11 and since? Mm-hmm. The entire planet, yeah. Essentially.
Yeah, it's amazing. And well, you know, it's obvious by just, you know, reading the press reports and things like that the Bush family and the Bin Laden family go hand in hand. Were they involved in actually building the towers?
I don't get into that.
Yeah.
Because the key feature here, why so many people are hoodwinked, mm-hmm. because we're not taught proper problem-solving skills. We aren't taught to begin with what happened. You first have to determine what happened before you can determine how it happened, and you have to do that before you can determine who did it, and you have to do that before you can determine why they did it. Mm-hmm. But of course, we were told, you know, they hate us for our freedoms, so they did, what was it they did? You know, they did it, what was it?
Yeah.
And the best example we have is the overpublicized Casey Anthony trial, mm-hmm. where at the end, they said not guilty. That doesn't mean innocent. They said not guilty. They could not convict her of a crime if they didn't know what the crime was. Mm-hmm. That the prosecution had not proved how the child died. And if you don't know what the crime is, you can't convict somebody for it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's a witch hunt.
Yeah. I'm undergoing one of those myself right now.
Yeah.
But
if you set up the problem, like I used to teach statics. That's the first boot camp type of engineering course. Mm-hmm. And I'm a real hard nose because my first teacher was too, and it paid off. You know, you have to put your name up here, the date here, the course number here, page 1/ out of how many. So each page is numbered. You begin with a problem statement, what's given in the problem, what you're looking for, and then how you're going to go about it. Mm-hmm. And once you set that up and get into this routine of first defining the problem and then going about solving it, the problems solve themselves. Mm-hmm. But if you start guessing at the answer and then checking the back of the book and then stirring the numbers around, checking the back of the book, you don't learn anything. Mm-hmm. And you also don't get to the answer. And most people are taught by cue cards, memorization, multiple choice tests, and then they're rated on their understanding by how well they perform on a multiple choice test. That's not problem solving skills. Mm-hmm. So if we define what happened, and I define some of those things, as soon as you define what happened, the biggest thing is the building turned into powder in midair. Mm-hmm. So if you want to say, you know, airplanes did it or whatnot, airplanes don't turn buildings into powder. And some people say there's no planes or there are planes. Fake planes can't turn buildings into powder either. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if they're real or fake. They're not an issue. They're a distraction.
It does seem like they really muddied the water, which is what they do. And they come out with a million different theories. And everybody has an attachment to their theory and won't really see the big picture, you know, because of their egos or their attachment to whatever their theory is. And, you know, I was watching over and over, you know, they said, well, we found thermite. Well, we found this. Well, these guys were in there with planning things, you know, and right before the event, they're in there, you know, on different floors planning different devices and things. And
we're changing light bulbs. That's suspicious. They're changing light bulbs.
Yeah. And, you know, it does, you know, and that's kind of the way these guys operate anyway. They do all kinds of crazy things. They might try five different ways of blowing up that building, but the main thing is none of those options, as you said, would have turned the building to dust in midair.
Right. As long as you're distracted from looking at what happened, you go around in circles. You don't get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start out just defining what happened, and as you define what happened, pretty soon you know how it was done. It sort of solves itself. So the building turned into powder in midair. Very little of it hit the ground. There's a whole lot of different ways you can prove that. And if the thing had pancaked down, stuff would have been shooting out sideways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's squirting out at like Mach 2.4.
Yeah.
You know, by the time it was at the ground level. So the adjacent buildings would look like they're machine gun fired.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen.
Yeah.
The only way... and the ground only shook for 8 seconds, and it takes 9.5 seconds in a vacuum to drop a bowling ball off the roof and have it hit the ground.
Yeah,
so
nothing.
That building didn't hit the ground.
yeah, definitely nothing is adding up on this. I couldn't see. You know, I'm not a structural engineer, but I know that these buildings are built as webs, and they're built to sustain an aircraft hit, you know, and look at the Empire State Building. I mean, hardly anything happened to it, and it took a hit, you know, from a plane. But just with that base knowledge, watching that happen and watching it, when I saw that the buildings go down, my first question was, how could that happen? I mean, how could they just turn to dust and just move on down like that, and not, as you're saying, not debris shooting out and, you know, everywhere, just a giant pile of debris. It wasn't there.
Right. It's where did it go? And actually, there's an interesting quote by one of the first responders, Michael Ober, who said, "I don't remember the sound of the building hitting the ground. Somebody told me that it was measured on the Richter scale. I don't know how true that is. If the building's hitting the ground that hard, how do I not remember the sound of it?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. The other thing too is I found interesting. What would be some of the, let's say an energy beam weapon or a directed beam weapon hitting the towers? Some of the side effects of that. I mean, what would the people be feeling on the? Would there be like some kind of a pre-warning signal or feelings of energy or something of that nature?
Let's back up. It's okay. a propagated myth kind of on the internet that I talk about ray beams from space or space beams, which is not the case at all. Mm-hmm. This is an interference of energy fields, mm-hmm. at different kinds of energy. And it's where those fields interfere and how they interact that creates this amazing effect.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing because, heck, we could use it for free energy.
Yeah, yeah.
And instead of these other uses.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, do you know what the effects would be on the people in the building? You know, would they have any warning that this is being directed, or do you think it just hit all at once and they didn't have a chance to even know what was going on?
It began with the airplane-shaped holes.
Mm-hmm.
And the buildings were toasted. And I use the word toast as in it's toast. It's history. You can't repair it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get a replacement. Cause it's beyond, you know, repair. Not necessarily implying any cause, just toast. So the building began toasting, and from the time they got the holes in it,
mm-hmm.
and buildings were it was coming apart until you know the end of the hour or hour and a half. Poof, wind. It in building 7 was toasting all afternoon. And there was very little left.
Mm-hmm.
It essentially did not make a seismic signal.
Yeah.
It just the outer shell, and then just like nothing left inside. But while the building was toasting for that hour, people were hanging on the outside of the building. You know, like from the 105th floor. You may have seen that picture.
Yes.
Where the guy looks like he's taking his pants off.
Yeah.
Hanging by one hand and one foot from the 105th floor.
Mm-hmm.
Taking his clothes off. And you look at other people have their clothes off. They're hanging on the outside. You know, clothing protects you in a fire.
Mm-hmm.
So why take it? Okay, let's say for some bizarre reason he wants to take his clothes off. And why does he have to do it outside the building? Well, let's, you know, if there's smoke inside, well, he could hold his breath, step inside, take the pants off, step back out.
Mm-hmm.
Why take them off outside? And you start looking at these various questions. You know, if I were there and the building's on fire, I'd head to the bathroom and get myself wet as fast as I could before we lost water pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be wet. If the fire sprinklers kicked on, I'd be wet. If they didn't kick on, it was hot. I'd be sweating, and I'd be wet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good chance that they were wet. And there are energy fields that affect wet things more than dry things.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you put a wet paper towel in your microwave oven, you know, it cooks, it steams.
Yeah.
Where a dry one, nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's just an observation. It is not proof, but you know these people want to live because they're hanging on to the building.
Yeah, it seems the building itself, you know, everybody was trying to get out of the building, and it didn't seem because of the smoke or anything else. It just, there was something going on inside that building that was driving everybody out of it, and I guess bodies were coming down like rain, you know, from people jumping out of the building. It doesn't make any sense as why if you jump out of the building, you know you're dead. You know you're not going to make it. That's just, okay, I'm out of here. I can't bear this anymore, whatever's going on. If you wanted to live, you would figure out some way of going down the stairs and, as fast as you could or whatever.
Or hanging your face out the window.
Yeah. And calling for help, you know, or anything.
Or breathing, you know, going to the upwind side and, you know, hanging your face out the building,
mm-hmm.
you know, to get fresh air.
Yeah.
But these windows that these people were hanging out of, you didn't see smoke or fumes or whatever pouring out of there. So
uh-huh.
It was some other phenomenon going on.
Exactly. You know, that's definitely what it looked like. So you think that this cooking phase was going on for a while before the building just lost integrity.
Right, the toasting phase.
Yeah,
It was slowly, you know, something was happening, you know, where it was kind of coming apart.
Mm-hmm.
And there actually is some stories of some first responders who did make it out of the building who described the building disintegrating. They're like on the third floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was no fire down there. And they knew it was not smoke. And it was just dust, but it was opaque. It blocked out 100% sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
And various descriptions like that were odd.
No, I know from some inside people. Like I have some friends in, I don't know if you call them high places or low places, but you know, that are in the inside, and they told me that we do have a beam weapon. That if we were to just take this thing and shoot it at a plane, the plane would just turn to dust. It would just become powder in the sky. And this was before 911, you know, that they were telling me about these weapons. And they actually have them, you know, in a hand. Well, I mean, one person could actually use this weapon to take a plane down now.
Right, but here we need to be careful. It takes a lot of discipline, and I know it's frustrating because
mm-hmm.
people like to jump to what did it. But to observe the evidence. Because if you start mixing in, you know, speculation and guesses, if you mix that in with the knowns, you have knowns and unknowns mixed
mm-hmm.
together, and that equals unknown.
Yeah.
So you can't go about proving it that way.
No.
But to be clear, what is so important is to be very clear on what you know and why you know it.
Exactly. I was just kind of alluding to the fact that, and I guess you can't even call it a fact because I have held some pretty exotic stuff in my hands before, but I haven't had one of these. if I did, we wouldn't have chemtrails right now. But just from this guy's credibility, knowing who he is, knowing the technology he has and the advance and how advanced he is, I just had to kind of take his word for it. And it actually helped me when I watched the building go down and turn into powder. That was the first thought that popped into my mind, that this was some kind of a directed energy beam.
Or energy, weapon. It was a field.
Weapon,
it was directed
field, yeah.
Because not direct line of sight, but directed is the effect was here, but a nanometer over it wasn't. So it was defined in a specific area where buildings across the street really were not affected.
Uh-huh.
Only buildings with a WTC prefix were destroyed that day.
Now, is there any, I know this is probably, I don't know if you come up with anything about as where this beam or this directed energy or whatever you want to call it, the origin of that. Have you found
Oh,
any?
You're getting the cart before the horse here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, when you start jumping into, the guesswork, that clouds your view of what you can prove and what you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're looking for what you think it is rather than looking at what's there.
Mm-hmm.
But for those who think that they need to know where it is, I use this example. See, if we're interfering different energy fields, analogy to that is a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Your cell phone by itself doesn't work. You need a tower to connect to. Mm-hmm. Whenever you make a cell phone call, do you know where that tower is? Or do you just know that you're within range?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know that you're within range and you don't care beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Because your cell phone works and that's all that matters. So think of it like that whatever's going on worked.
Mm-hmm.
It had what it needed in the space it needed. And it could be a variety of things. We can reproduce all of the bizarre effects that I documented from this in somebody's lab, and I showed that as a proof of concept in Chapter 17.
Mm-hmm.
That's the work of John Hutchison.
Now, could we go into some of those?
Pardon me?
Could we go into some of the anomalies or some of the effects that happened?
So the biggest thing is, where did all the material go?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the next day, Peter Jennings in the studio was talking to George Stephanopoulos at the scene and said, George, where's all the rubble? And George says, well, I was talking to a volunteer who said it all fell down to the ground, was pulverized, and evaporated. He's just doing the best he can with, what he has to go on. But in other words, he didn't see enough rubble there either.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this lack of debris, and we talked about the lack of seismic impact.
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots of dust, and it broke down finer and finer. Like, 15 minutes after the first tower went away, the air is clear from like the kneecaps on up.
Mm-hmm.
But then you notice the dust is starting to kick up around their feet and rise up. That fine of dust could not have settled out of the air
mm-hmm.
in that amount of time. And now it's starting to rise up, and it continued breaking down and just was an ongoing kind of process. The all-time favorite here is toasted cars.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Cars up to like a half mile away toasted. And there's this entire parking lot that all the cars in a row, one right after the other, it's like spontaneous combustion. But the paper between the WTC complex and this car park didn't burn. Paper sitting next to the car, under the car, didn't burn.
Mm-hmm.
And then you notice these orange glowing things. They're sitting on paper, and the paper's not burning. And then the people who were mowed down by this dust cloud when it rolled out, it overtook them and just left them covered with dust. It didn't cook them.
Mm-hmm.
The dust cloud was not hot, and there was a lot of unburned paper. So it's not a conventional heat involved.
It sounds like an implosion but then again, I'm jumping to conclusions.
Right. It's tough because that's what we're taught to do,
mm-hmm.
to pattern match and jump to a conclusion quickly. And that is how this stays covered up.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the biggest keys. And talking more about that, there seems to be three things that keep it covered up. One is the problem solving skills. If you start backwards, you're never going to get to the solution. Mm-hmm. Because especially if this is not in your repertoire of voices. And the second thing is groupthink. People feel more comfortable when other people agree with them. Mm-hmm. So if people are less likely to go out on a limb by themselves and come up with something different. And the third thing is the killer, the implications of this. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't accept it, maybe it doesn't exist.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's this that goes back to Nazi Germany, basically, where they say, you know, if you want to get away with something, it has to be so heinous that the people won't look at it, and you know, the implications of this, you know, the obvious, the way the building turned into dust, the implications, where that takes us, people just don't want to accept the fact that maybe our whole
system, a human being that can do this.
Yeah, a human being could do that, and our system is run by these human beings, and so many were complicitory in it that it's just hard to wrap your head around. People could actually be that evil just for an agenda that would sacrifice that many people, kill, you know, men, women, children, and not even blink an eye just because they have another agenda.
Well, we don't even necessarily know what that agenda is, except to hindsight. Mm-hmm. You know, just, you know, for the historical record. But the fact that this didn't happen by accident.
No.
You know, it wasn't a tornado that swept through town that day and sliced mm-hmm. buildings and whatnot. But what we can learn from it, and there's some good things to learn from it, is that, you know, once you've read enough of the book and to deprogram yourself from the conditioning from that day, you know, we're showing these pictures of the towers going poof, mm-hmm. and people think, oh, terrorism, horror. They're conditioned that. Once you get over that and you look at the cover of the book, mm-hmm. I call it the bubbler picture because it looks like a drinking fountain that's made out of dust.
Uh-huh.
You look at that, and that's not a collapse. And you look at that and you realize, you know, whatever did this is capable of free energy. So it's free mm-hmm. energy technology. Not that it was something powered by free energy, but that this technology can produce free energy. Mm-hmm. What this has done is affect the molecular bonds of the entire building. It turned into powder. And mm-hmm. if we can use that for good.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And now I know for a fact that we have fuelless energy. I know that we have, I mean, I've held a device in my hands that has 9 coils in it, and each coil puts out 25,000 watts, and it's just like insane. And it's the size of a pie pan.
Joe Citizen on the street, he's not going to take your word for it.
No, no.
And think of how many people, you know, like John Hutchison can do these kinds of things, but you have to go to his lab to see it.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of this is the entire planet knows or can know.
Uh-huh.
That's the beauty of it. It was an exhibition of free energy technologies. So if everyone can recognize that, that means that everyone is free to develop it in broad daylight mm-hmm. without getting suicided because they're, you know, in the safety of their basement.
Yeah, definitely. I know, well, some of the people around that, there was Walter Rosenthal, and he's dead, you know, that was there. He's a rocket scientist with, you know, NASA and some other people that were there when this was demonstrated. You know, unfortunately, the ones that really could do something with it seemed to, you know, die of cancer or something else, like, very quickly.
That is what's happened is, you know, people who develop free energy technology get suicided.
Mm-hmm.
But the beauty of, you know, if there's any silver lining in any cloud, they demonstrate this. They chose to demonstrate this in front of the world. Let's get the world to recognize it, and voila,
mm-hmm.
everyone can understand that energy technology exists.
Exactly. I'm looking at the cover of your book right now. I went back to the cover, and I was looking at that bubbling effect. And And I've never seen that. I mean, I've watched a lot of building demolitions, and they just pancake down, and everything goes blown out from the bottom. But this is like bubbling
right,
up.
Right, it doesn't turn to dust until it hits, you know, controlled demolition doesn't turn to dust until it hits the ground.
Yeah.
And the dust really doesn't go above where the highest point of the building was.
No. And you can see the dust going up and then falling down.
Or it continues going up and down the eastern seaboard.
Uh-huh.
You can see it from satellite images.
Yeah.
If you look at page 139, this is another startling thing that, you know, you realize what you're looking at type of question.
Mm-hmm.
These are steel beams falling through the air. I call them wheat checks. The outer prefab units of 3 stories tall by 3 columns wide,
mm-hmm.
that they made the building from. Those are falling through the air, trailing opaque dust, mm-hmm. kind of like an Alka-Seltzer tablet.
Yeah.
Now, think if you're up there on the 110th floor at Windows of the World restaurant with you know, they have plenty of flour up there. And you're going to jump out the window covered with flour. Somebody on the ground, if they're looking, are they going to be able to see much of that flour? It's going to blow off instantly.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, let's say you carry a couple of bags of flour out and you sprinkle it behind you as you're going down.
Mm-hmm.
No, they're not going to see that either.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how much flour do you need to carry with you if you're going to jump out the window and trail dust like, you know, a beam or check a beam out covered with dust?
Mm-hmm.
You cannot strap that much flour onto a steel beam to trail that much dust all the way down. That dust is coming from the steel.
And it's dematerializing, or the molecular structure is breaking down on the way down. It's you know, going through this book, it seems like you've brought up so many things. Each one makes the case. But, you know, when you have about, I don't know if you kept count of how many arguments you have through here that make it very clearly that this wasn't a demolition, a basic demolition or caused by planes. But each one of these is clearly makes a case that this was definitely not a demolition.
And it's definitely not conventional.
Weaponry.
It's not... Not bombs, nothing kinetic, you know, like
mm-hmm.
not heat related, not you know, a projectile,
mm-hmm.
Not a bomb, not a missile, not a nuke, not a mini nuke, not a mini micro nano nuke, not welding materials. You go down the whole list of things that are on people's checklist, none of those
mm-hmm.
work. You can eliminate every single one of them.
Exactly. Now, what do you think about a possibility now, you know, if you get into the mine, and this again, I'm not trying to state a fact or anything, but just from past history, the way these guys operate, they usually really muddy the waters with all kinds of other things to break people away from the obvious, you know, with cut beams a certain way, thermite, they have all these other things, and these guys are pretty clever, you know. Maybe they did do all these other things just to muddy the water so people wouldn't pay attention to the obvious of the building, you know, the dustification going on.
One of the things I've noticed, like the thermite story, they don't even say they found thermite in the dust. They say it's thermitic material,
mm-hmm.
which means some of the ingredients for thermite. And the ingredients that are in there are aluminum powder and iron oxide. Well, if you dustify the building,
mm-hmm.
the aluminum cladding on the building becomes aluminum powder. And the steel, which is 98% iron, if you break the molecular bonds, that's falling through the air, it instantly oxidizes,
mm-hmm.
you know, rusts. By the time it hits the ground, you've got rust powder and aluminum powder. There you go.
Yeah.
So by saying it's some of the ingredients for thermites or it's thermitic material, you get people distracted away from realizing the building turned to powder.
Mm-hmm.
This is powdered building.
Now, what about the photographs? I mean, I saw some video or photographs of a fire engine driving through something was molten there. Looked like it was on fire, and they were driving through it, at ground zero. I don't know if you saw any of that footage.
No, there are things that, you know, molten meaning liquid doesn't mean it's hot and molten.
Yeah.
And my favorite phrase is, hot things glow, but not everything that glows is hot.
Mm-hmm.
For example, consider incandescent lights versus fluorescent lights.
Mm-hmm.
They both glow, but they're different temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, you know, resistance heating, and it's heated up enough so that it glows, and the other one is a type of plasma. So if we have something glowing, we cannot assume it's fire or that it's hot molten metal.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, these glowing things sitting on a piece of paper and the paper's not burning. That glowing thing can't be glowing because it's hot. It's glowing for a different reason.
That makes sense. Yeah, that would take care of that argument. There's so many different elements in this, but you know, all of these theories, it just seems like when you go back to critical thinking and phase one of the dustification, all these other theories don't really matter. They just seem to be something there to muddy the waters. You know, that we really have to get back to the basics on, okay, how did this building turn to dust?
Right. Any which way you look at it, the building did turn to dust.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a video clip of, you call it the spire. It's some remaining core columns of the North Tower. After the building peels away from like a banana peeling, leaves these core columns about 700 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
They're way up there. And then just for a few moments, and then it kind of starts to drop, and then it faints into dust. Poof. Right.
Yeah.
Before your eyes.
Uh-huh.
The thermite folks say, oh, it fell down, and that's just fine dust that settled on it that was left hanging in the air because the dust's so fine. Well, if the dust is so fine, it's left hanging in the air, how did it settle on it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the dust settled on it, it isn't fine.
Yeah.
You know, so, mm-hmm. so from that argument alone, the dust is coming from the columns. You know, mm-hmm. These are vertical columns with their very crisp outline, and then it comes a moment in time where, in this video clip, where it's no longer a crisp outline. It's just this fluff. And it turns into this cloud of dust. So clearly, uh-huh. There's something that causes this.
Definitely. I can't wrap my head around anything other than something that is disassembling the molecular bond there. It seems like the denser the object, it might take a little longer, you know, to turn to powder. It might hold up a little longer, but
plastic cars were another, you know, interesting thing, and that didn't happen when the tower was destroyed, when it went poof and turned into dust. That term comes from a news reporter who talked about the tower poofed out. That was a good term. The cars appeared to go into spontaneous combustion right afterwards,
mm-hmm.
as the dust cloud was rolling down the street.
Hmm.
Not necessarily that it's from the dust cloud, but the timing was then.
Mm-hmm.
And John Hutchison had this experiment with his toy boat on water, and you can tell he has his gizmo turned on because the water's hopping up. It's
mm-hmm.
levitating.
Yeah.
And then he turns the gizmo off, and the water stops, you know, jumping. And the boat then ignites.
Wow.
It looks like it goes into spontaneous combustion.
Uh-huh.
He turns his gizmo back on, and this is very repeatable. So it appears to occur right after the signal is turned off.
Mm-hmm.
And why the cars? And you look at all the different patterns. You know, it didn't happen to trees. Nice bushy leaves on the trees, unharmed. Signposts, street lights, you know, traffic lights. The cars are on rubber tires.
Mm-hmm.
They're insulated, so if mm-hmm. they're taking in a charge from the environment, they cannot discharge it fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
They're not grounded.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good one. I didn't think about that as why, you know, I was kind of thinking that why wouldn't it short everything else out in the area and destroy it, but that does make sense. It couldn't discharge the energy.
It seems consistent with why the towers also stopped at ground level and weren't destroyed below ground level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, they're somewhat grounded from the top end down, but it takes time for, you know, whatever type of charge is built up in it. But as it gets close to the ground, it naturally would want to stop there. It doesn't go below ground.
Mm-hmm. Now that would be because the ground was actually dissipating the charge, the energy.
That's what it appears. Again, I don't know that for a fact because I wasn't there with, mm-hmm. with my meter plugged into it.
Yeah.
But it's consistent with that same concept.
That does make sense because I was wondering, how could they turn this building to dust, take it all the way down to ground level, and then stop it? And I know in your book you talk about the bathtub there, that huge concrete bunker around the buildings that keeps the river out. It was not harmed in any way, which if, you know, as you're saying, if a building that large, when it comes down, it's going to knock some big chunks and crack it and do everything
but
else.
It was harmed, but not from the buildings, quote, falling on it. Mm-hmm. It was harmed when they brought in the earth-moving equipment to help clean up.
Mm-hmm.
So the earth-moving equipment damaged it, but, you know, 2 500,000-ton buildings slamming on it didn't.
Yeah, it's, you know, none of this, when you get the story, you know, the mainstream story they tried to give us, and then you look at all of this evidence here, just nothing is adding up. You know, from every architect I've ever heard has talked about this, they said there is no possible way these buildings could have come down like that, especially with two planes.
Did not spill across the street.
Yeah. Yeah, and then fall. Well, they didn't. I wouldn't say fall. I mean, they were dustified or whatever. But if it was an event like that, you know, they probably would have started to bend or fold or something and come down and hit several other buildings and made a much bigger mess. This was like surgically done. In a way to, it's almost like, okay, we're just going to clean up these two buildings and start over with a perfect little platform after we're done to do something else.
And I was teaching strength of materials class. We just finished learning what temperature does to how it affects steel. You know, mm-hmm. how steel gets weaker at what temperature. And so I gave a pop quiz to the students, you know, basically like a freebie quiz, you know, mm-hmm. tenants quiz for fun. And, okay, I've got this picture of a bunch of wadded-up metal coat hangers. So you want to boil a pot of water. So you get these metal coat hangers, then put them on some fire, get the fire started, and put this big bucket of water on top of the coat hangers. I've got a photo of it. Now, as this fire gets going and the water starts to heat up, what's going to happen? You know, check all that apply. You know, nothing. Fire burns out. Two, the pot slowly starts sagging to the ground. Three, without any notice, the coat hangers fly apart in straight sections in all directions. Four, without any notice, the coat hangers, you know, the grill, turns into dust and the pot slams to the ground.
Yeah.
And once you get to that point, they all start giggling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your own common sense, it's not all that common, would say that if you start heating up, I think most people know that those metal coat hangers, you start heating them up, they're not as rigid anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the pot would just start sagging down close to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have any bent segments. If you look at the beams left, they're straight.
Mm-hmm.
Or they look like rolled up carpets. You know, those wheat checks, those three columns? They're mm-hmm. they're rolled around and curved around the vertical axis. In other words, they're not bent over from too much weight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's another problem. But if you go to page 191, mm-hmm. this is an elevation map of what was left. You see you know what things are raised and what things are missing. Like the main body of Building 4 is missing. It's gone. Nothing left there.
Mm-hmm.
Just about. Building 3 is pretty much gone except this little stub at the end. And at the base of where Tower 1 was is this ghost outline showing where the towers were. You see this little kind of pimple at the bottom there, a little hump.
Mm-hmm.
Stairway B. 14 people survived there, and they all walked out under their own steam.
Wow.
So, it's just unbelievable that a huge building falls on them. And one of them said, I looked and said, guys, there used to be 106 floors above us, and now I'm seeing sunshine. There's nothing above us. That big building doesn't exist. He later said, these are the biggest office buildings in the world, and I didn't see one desk, one chair, one phone, nothing. Mm-hmm. Another one was talking about when he was on his handy-talkie calling for his buddies, you know, Mayday calls. Where are you? Stairway B, Tower 1. Where? Third and fourth floor, Tower 1, Stairway B. Where? And then he said, where's Tower 1?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, yeah.
The voice is coming from beyond.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that's pretty interesting. The looking at this, it's pretty clear. Now the building building 7. Now that is the kicker that it really, you know, you ask people and they just get this blank stare over their face. You know, when you say, "Well, what, you know, what happened to building 7?" You know, apparently there was a couple small fires going on there, according to the fire department. It had sustained a little bit of damage, and then you ask that basic question. Well, what hit Building 7? You know, what took that down in the same fashion as the other buildings? And people just go, what's Building 7? They haven't even looked into it. They didn't even realize there was another building that went down, and that nothing
hit it. Well, also, Tower 3 went down too, or not down, it went away.
Uh-huh.
It's just gone. And then, you know, Building 4, the main body of it, there were 7 buildings that were destroyed that day. Mm-hmm. The middle of Building 6 went missing.
Mm-hmm.
You walk in at ground level, and there's a first responder who was walking through the lobby of Building 6 when he said everything went black. Now he's walking mm-hmm. through with his buddies. And then, you know, when the dust cleared and sunlight came through, you know, he was in the lobby and he could look up and see sunshine. His buddies were gone. You know, he was right there at the edge of that zone where the building went missing.
Wow. That's something out of Star Trek, basically, you know, or some very, very exotic weaponry. That's the only thing I can say.
But if you looked at building 7 all afternoon, it had this thick amount of stuff pouring out, opaque, you know, fumes. I call it fumes because that's a general term, because mm-hmm. I don't know if it's smoke or dust or what it is. So it's important to use these generic terms so that you don't bias your observations. If you call it smoke, you're assuming fire is the cause.
Mm-hmm.
So there's these fumes coming out, just thick, opaque fumes all afternoon from, you know, from one side and one side only, from ground to roof.
Mm-hmm.
Just this thick stuff pouring out. And you look at it, some videos I've seen, it's like it's being pulled out because there's some open windows around the corner. You know, if you have a traffic jam with fumes wanting to come out, why don't they come out the path of least resistance?
Yeah.
Instead of forcing out this other end. So it's like something's pulling them out, like a big vacuum cleaner sucking it out. But the way it spirals out, it's bizarre looking. But what is all that mass that left the building? Tremendous yeah. amount of material.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then when the building meets its demise, it doesn't make a, you know,
it doesn't make a sound. It just disappears. You know, it's to me, it's so obvious. You know, you look at the basics. A, you know, we know this wasn't two planes that took it down. You know, B, we know it was a dustification process.
It wasn't two planes, whether they're real or whether they're holograms or
yeah.
fake or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. And the building's just dustified, basically, you know, which is obvious. I mean, that's obviously been proven. And which leads us to C. How were they dust? How did they turn to dust? You know, how were they dustified? And D, who did it? You know.
Well, I tried to cover that in my federal QTAM case.
Uh-huh.
I don't know who did it, but I know who knows.
Yeah.
And there were the defendants in my case because uh-huh. they develop energy weapons, develop manufacture energy weapons. Plus, they had a contract with the U.S. government to know everything about any weapon of mass destruction that exists. Mm-hmm. Or is being developed anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So they not only can recognize what technology it was, but whose technology, you know, whose fingerprints.
Mm-hmm.
on it. So that was that's about the closest you could possibly get. You know, it's easy to speculate. It's so easy to guess who did it, and you come up with all sorts of stories, but then we're back to like the Casey Anthony trial. That was a case on speculation. They had yet to do all their homework and prove how the child died. When they took it to court, it's important to get things in the right order. If you get them out of order, you never get to the answer. You end up running on beliefs. So exactly. It's so important. And I think it's going to become more and more important in the future for all of us to be able to understand what we do know and what we don't know and how to figure out what the truth is from what we're given.
Yeah, it is a tough one, and just the critical thinking. I sometimes wonder, and this is a little off the subject, but, you know, with all the fluoride in the water and a lot of tap water, they have 850 carcinogens or toxic chemicals in there, in the water, and then you got all the GMO foods and the aspartame, and I can go on, and the mercury, you know, in the, that, you know, maybe just people are at a place where they just, their minds just aren't working, and they can't use critical thinking, and they've just become sheep, you know, waiting for the TV to tell them.
How about that, you know, we do know how we're taught in school, and we're taught in a way that is backwards so that you can never get to the solution. And I had an unusual background, which is why I tend to see things when others don't, but I am aware of this backwards way of doing things, which is, you know, this memorize and regurgitate that we're encouraged to do, and maybe that is by design, so that it keeps us locked in, and being able to see our way out.
Yeah, and I always think about, too, what happened to that gut feeling, you know, when just that gut feeling when you see something that tells you there's something wrong with this picture. I mean, where did that go? You know, obviously, right away when this happened, you know, my little spidey senses kicked in, and I just said that didn't happen the way they're saying it happened. Just from the very first seeing the building go down, the way it went down, everything else, just from that first image of seeing that, I right away, you know, a little bit of critical thinking kicked in, and I just said, you know, there's a lot more to this story, you know.
And why do you override it? That becomes the thing. That's the peer pressure control.
Exactly.
Too.
Yeah.
That one of the things, when my eyes and ears don't agree, I turn off my ears. I become deaf, and I just see. And that's what happened that day. I was just watching, and I wasn't hearing what I was being told to see.
Exactly.
And I never forget being in that faculty conference room, looking around the room, almost ready to snicker and point at the screen like, you aren't buying this, are you? I felt it was another War of the Worlds type thing, except through video this time. And, you know, I just had this expression on my face, and they looked at me like, what kind of a wacko did we just hire?
Yeah.
Man, yeah. You don't say anything after that. You just walk the straight and narrow. Peer pressure does, you know, it doesn't change your mind, but you just don't talk about it.
Exactly. Yeah, I've got a lot of heat from talking about it from day one. You know, unfortunately, we're hitting the end of the hour, and, I mean, there is so much in this book. It's such an incredible compilation of information and evidence that, you know, I think people should all have this on their coffee tables, you know, and it's, where did the towers go with a big question mark by Dr. Judy Wood, and I can't recommend this more. I think everybody needs to get a hold of this book and read it. I'm still reading it.
It's a course in critical thinking. Anybody can understand it.
Exactly.
You're just led through the evidence. You know, look here, look there. You know, things that you were taught to see differently, but you know, look again. What do you see?
And just the pictures alone, all the pictures in here, you look at them. I mean, they say a picture is worth 1,000 words. You look at the pictures and you go, this, you know, none of this adds up as far as the official story. I don't see how anybody could get this book and go through it and not come away knowing that there's a lot more to the story, and the official story is just a really bad joke. You know,
not as advertised.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that term. If the product was not as advertised.
Yeah, yeah. I think we need our money back and our government back as well. on that one.
But it's our job to do something about it. It's our world.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think the more people that know about this, the safer we will be.
I agree. You know, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. And again, you know, you have my highest respect for standing tall and bringing this information out. And I know you probably received all kinds of backlash from it. But again, you know, I can't thank you enough for bringing this information out and finally getting down to the critical thinking level of what really happened with 911.
Well, thanks so much for caring about this yourself and sharing it with your audience. That's wonderful.
And I know you have a lot of other topics we could get into, but unfortunately we have an hour show. We'll have to get you back on to cover some of the other topics that you'd like to discuss.
Sure. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the show. We're out of time. This is James Gilliland signing off. Have a great evening. Okay, I got it. Are you there?
Yep.
Okay, thanks. Great interview.
Sure.
I think we covered a lot considering we only had an hour, but we covered enough to get people really thinking, you know, on this.
Right. And it is it does take a lot of discipline to start out with what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the key, I think, that, well, that's one of them.
Yeah.
That people are really taught backwards. And then the truth of movement and so forth is, you know, they say, well, let's use the scientific method. Guess an answer and then go cherry picking evidence to support the answer.
Mm-hmm.
That keeps people in this circle.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
More and more we're going to have to know how to think.
Well, I just think the bottom line is that, you know, everything turned to dust, period. End of story. I mean, how?
Dustification.
Where do you have to go after that? You know, after that, there's just two other questions I have is that who did it? You know, basically, not, you know, what kind of weapon did they use and who did it?
It could be, you know, as small of a group as, you know, one, two, or three people.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't have to be many.
No.
Because if you have these independent secret military exercises that are always going on, you get one of them fiddling around with gravity, another one fiddling around with electricity, another one fiddling around with magnetism, another one know what the other one's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Except one guy in the booth someplace has coordinated these exercises.
Yeah. Is there,
it could be something like that.
Can you have a guess? I mean, just a guess. I won't hold you to it. But I'm wondering if this is a space-based weapon, if we have – or if it was just done from a rooftop.
One thing we didn't get into at all is Hurricane Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you're now aware of the hurricane.
Yes.
I was on one show where I was being called a liar for saying that there was a hurricane there. But a hurricane is a big Tesla coil.
Yeah.
You know, you can feel a storm coming.
Mm-hmm.
It creates a static field around it.
Exactly.
There was thunder at the three major airports surrounding Manhattan that day, so we have evidence that you did have the static field there.
Mm-hmm.
How John Hutchison produces his effects... He creates a static field with the Van de Graaff generator.
Mm-hmm.
He used to use a Tesla coil.
Mm-hmm.
And interferes within that radio frequency signals. So if you have the, you know, think of the static field as the coverage area for the cell phone tower.
Yeah.
And then you have something else that within that, you know, other frequencies of different kinds of energy, like, you know, magnetism versus an electric field,
mm-hmm,
versus a microwave signal. And it's that these are like a key that unlock a door where there's magic.
Mm-hmm.
If we go back to when Tesla first came up with the hydroelectric power plants, you move a conductor through a magnetic field and voila, you get electricity. It's like magic.
Mm-hmm.
Because one can affect the other. Hmm. Imagine if you can alter something else. You know, that it doesn't seem like we're getting electricity from nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know much about Well, I know people that have these devices, but they're sitting on the shelf and they're not going to do anything. I've actually tried to get one of them here to run the ranch here, because we have a totally self-sufficient ranch, other than we still need power to run the pump, you know, for the well.
Well, windmills are good for that.
Yeah, and I'm probably going to do something like that, is do something with a windmill, because we do have a lot of wind.
There's a friend of mine in Minnesota who never was hooked up to the electric grid, mm-hmm. has all solar panels and windmills. Mm-hmm. He can go 2 weeks, well, probably longer now, but back then he'd go 2 weeks without sunlight, you know, uh-huh. with his golf cart battery. He has had like 24 golf cart batteries that he would store it in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm looking for something a little more exotic, but we could go that route. You know, I'm really thinking a windmill might be the way to go.
But the beauty of 9/11, if there's, again, a silver lining in it, is that it makes free energy technology safe
mm-hmm.
for anybody to develop.
Yeah.
And definitely 9/11 and what I have in this book, nothing could be more important to the crew, as I call them, you know.
Yeah.
Say powers that be, the crew.
Uh-huh.
And I've come to learn that by what goes on. Earlier today I sent an email with a link to something Fetzer posted.
Mm-hmm.
A big heavy-duty smear campaign. He makes up stuff and is claiming this. I haven't interacted with the guy for 5 years.
Yeah.
But he makes it seem like I'm arguing with him. You know, Judy's all about infighting.
Yeah.
And trying to turn my book into a theory and speculation, and mm-hmm. it shows how desperate they are to cover it up. And I've come to see that because of the free energy connection.
Yeah.
It's very threatening.
You'd be surprised. Like, even here, we have UFOs flying over here on a regular basis, and they've never stopped. It's an ongoing thing. And so when the debunkers try to debunk it, I said, well, you know, you can debunk this all you want, but, you know, thousands of people have come here, triple PhD Boeing engineers, NASA people, you know, air traffic controllers, pilots have seen these objects, and they're saying they're not ours. Well, I'm not saying they're not ours. I'm saying they're an unidentified flying object. It might
yep.
be ours. You know,
I like what, yeah. I forgot who was, David Sirita
yeah.
in 2004 had said, if they're not ours after 9/11, shouldn't we care whose they are?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, to be consistent. Yeah.
Yeah, and so anyway, that's the interesting thing is that same thing. I've had so many smear campaigns and debunkers and anything else, and now I don't even give them any energy whatsoever. I know these guys. All they're doing is establishing their own character and their own ignorance. And
except the sad part is how many people get sucked up into it
yeah.
for like 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And if those I call them collection agencies.
Yeah.
They collect people and they keep them contained.
Mm-hmm.
So people want to find out something. They gravitate towards this architects and engineers group.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone speaks of my name in there, they get tossed from the group because
yeah.
they don't want it affected.
Oh, yeah.
And so people don't learn about my work.
I've been tossed out of almost everywhere, so I'm not. I figure if
groups,
you're not getting tossed out, you're not doing your work.
You know? It's you know, groups are about establishing groupthink.
Yeah, exactly.
And that, you know, build it and they will come, right?
Yeah,
you know,
and that's so prevalent in the UFO community because, you know, you have the nuts and bolters. Everything has to be nuts and bolts, or it's not real. And then you have the everything's fearful abduction. They're here to eat us and dissect us group, you know. and then you have the group that says it's all back engineered military stuff. But then again, you say,
it's all video fakery.
Yeah, and then you go, well, if it's back engineered, then what'd they back engineer it from? You know, so there's got to be, you know, something happened, some crash or whatever. And then you have the people that are saying it's all love, it's all light, you know, and there isn't anything negative. So none of them can agree on anything. And I've always felt it's all the above.
It's whatever somebody wants it to be, but if you, you know, with my approach, if you go that route, you know what you know, and everything else you know that you don't know. If you don't know it, you can't say it doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's where I sit on it. I know what I can, you know, what I know exists, and after that, and I've always been that way, and this, the beginning of the conclusions chapter of the book, I talk about experience I had when I was 7. My brother took me out to watch a total eclipse of the moon with my mom's telescope, and I, wow, isn't that cool? Those folks up there, I didn't know if they're humans or what, but those folks up there are so organized that they could turn out all their streetlights together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my interpretation of a total eclipse of the moon.
Yeah.
You know, this wave turned out the streetlights.
Uh-huh.
And the next day at school, the other kids laughed at me, like, don't you know that nothing can live on the moon? Well, that was before we were told that this guy named Neil Armstrong could live on the moon.
Uh-huh.
So when did it become okay?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, how do you know what you know? How do you know what to eliminate?
Yeah, I have footage of this, a very large ship. I can't tell exactly how big it is. It came down, landed on Mount Adams. It started morphing from 1 to 3 and back to 1 again. And it did this for 20 minutes. And it would morph out to 3 on one side, go to 3 on the other side. It was doing all these crazy effects. And then it takes off. And I have 20 minutes of footage of this happening. So we give it to James Todd at the OMSI Planetarium, and he says that we're mistaken, that this is nothing more than the space shuttle. And this is what blows me away, the absence of critical thinking. The ABC guy that showed it to him, and I asked him, well, didn't you notice it was landed on the mountain? And he goes, yeah, it was. And I said, well, didn't you notice it was morphing from 1 to 4, and then it landed, and then it took off? And he goes, yeah, it did. And I said, and you didn't ask him? You didn't ask him how the space shuttle could morph into 3 objects and then land on a mountain?
And how it can take off?
Yeah. And he goes, I never thought of that. And I just went, oh, my God. You know, it's you know, to me, you see that. First of all, you see the head science guy that's there because he's the best of his field or whatever, coming up with something that lame. And then the other, the journalist there doesn't even ask, you know, he just goes along with it.
Again, it's a, you know, there's 3 categories I have things into. There's the problem-solving skills, getting things in the wrong order, you know, just jumping to the assumptions without establishing it.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, the groupthink, peer pressure, go with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the implications are probably in the back of their mind. But
yeah,
so many people that see what they think they're supposed to see,
mm-hmm,
not what is right before them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I understand why, because, you know, there has been the giggle factor and the peer pressure around the UFO stuff. And if you're in mainstream, you don't want to say anything like that because, you know, you could lose your job or not get the promotion or whatever. So, you know, I kind of understand where he's coming from. But it's just that total absence of base logic and critical thinking that I run into all the time, you know, here. And it's people that are trying to debunk us all the time. I go, well, where's your base logic? The assumptions that you're coming up with are not scientific. They don't add up to the facts. And
like a scientist who, you know, a PhD scientist who's trying to say that it was thermite that did this.
Mm-hmm.
Thermite is hot, really hot. You know, the towers would look like a giant sparkler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If it was like a sparkler, it didn't look like that.
Uh-huh.
Is that people repeat what they think they're supposed to know.
Well, even thermite still would not
turn things to dust. It's a welding material.
Yeah, there'd still be all this rubble. I mean, they'd probably burn the beams up to allow it to collapse, but that's about it.
Or melt it in a big glob of something, but it just doesn't work.
No.
But how do so many people get hoodwinked?
I just think it's a combination of what you were saying, that we haven't been taught critical thinking, and also, too, I just think some people can't just don't have it. They're either dumbed down by society in general, or all the chemicals or something, because it's I run into this over and over again. I'll have two people in the field, and one people will see an obvious UFO, and it powers up, lights up the whole field, makes a turn, goes off. And the guy will go, well, that was an iridium flare, you know? And I said, well, wait a second. It responded to the people here. It's too low for a satellite. It's went around behind the mountain there, you know, the treetop level, and it made a turn.
It wasn't a falling star.
Yeah, and it made a turn, and they just cannot accept it. They cannot accept what they saw and the obvious. And I just see this over and over again. It just blows me away how people have such a vested interest in maintaining their belief system that they won't look at anything else.
Or, you know, people laugh at them or whatnot. Like one of the first responders was levitated, you know, floated down the stairs, and is trying to rationalize this in normal terms and decide that she must have died and God carried her downstairs.
Uh-huh.
Because how else could she have floated down the stairs?
Yeah.
There's all sorts of rationalizations people do to fit it into this what they've constructed as the, you know, what the world should be.
Yeah, and that goes back to that Hutchinson effect where things float, I guess, when they're
right,
when they're hit with those energies.
You see a car parked, but except it's upside down, the tires in the air instead of on the ground.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, hopefully this one will change enough minds and get out to enough people that'll, you know.
If anyone thinking. Reads the book, you know, honestly reads the book through, by the time they get to the end, they're a new person.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what your background is. It's written so that, you know, you, some people are scared of equations. Okay, just step around them. You don't mm-hmm. have to have them.
Well, all I had to do is look at the cover, you know.
Right.
I looked at the cover and I go, wow, that kind of eliminates everything else. You know?
It's just frothing up, like, you know, sensing up. And another thing I often say is, you know, like those beams falling through the air, like an Alka-Seltzer tablet.
Uh-huh.
Well, Alka-Seltzer is this rigid object until you change its environment. You put it in a glass of water, it effervesces and dissolves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, steel is a rigid object until you change its environment.
Exactly.
And it effervesces and dissolves.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, you
know, how to change this environment is the key.
Yeah, you can't argue that. You know, it's and the photographs and all the evidence. It just, well, I guess some people can, but as I said, they have a vested interest in their story, and they're not going to change it.
Or the cover up.
Yeah, or they're part of the cover up, and
Or they're going along with those folks, thinking that they're on a team, you know, and they're safe on a team, and Judy Wood's just this you know, individual.
Yeah. Well, you know, the old saying, pioneers take the most arrows, and you're going to piss off everyone that has an interest, you know, in keeping their story and their group together. So, and, you know, and there are people that are paid to do that have infiltrated those groups. So it's probably all the above.
Right. I think very few are leaders. There's, you know, I've identified who, you know, who's on the payroll and who's just a gullible idiot, a useful idiot.
Mm-hmm.
But the majority of the people prefer to be in groups so they feel safe. If other people are saying such and such, well, then they're not alone to say it, and so therefore that means they're right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I think enough people get you on the radio shows and become, you know, that's a pretty big group out there. They're going to hear these shows. They're going to be in your camp.
I forgot to mention the book website, but if they go to my regular website, that would get them to the book one,
yeah,
or
they'll get it.
Amazon. They can find it. Uh-huh. They have my name.
Great. I think we're going to air this. Nate was thinking about airing it on 911, but we might air it earlier. We were talking about that'd be a great idea to air it right on 911.
Well, it's probably. A lot of people, you know, it's just overload that day.
Yeah.
You know, mega overload.
Yeah. Well, I think people are going to be thinking about 911, and it might be a good time to give them, you know, the real story.
Right. I think maybe a week before.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking about doing it a week before.
Because I've noticed, like, where, you know, the hits to my website and that sort of thing, you see where the, when the surge comes, and it builds up, and it tapers off pretty quickly right after 9/11, but it builds up for, like, a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I have two shows. I have the BBS one and the World Puja one, so we'll probably put it on both.
Great.
But,
great.
They kind of get upset me when I do that, when I put it on both shows. But when I told them, I said, well, this is really important information, so consider it a public service.
You know? Yeah, and so many people want to know, but they just never knew where to go look.
Mm-hmm.
And those who you start looking, you come into this, you know, architects and engineers stuff with the thermite, and it turns people off. They run the other way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that whole theory just gets killed by that, the picture, you know, the dustification going on. It's just, and I don't know why people can't see that, but I think more and more people are.
It, because of ridicule. Ridicule really works.
Mm-hmm.
They ridiculed me beginning in 2006.
Yeah.
About this. The book was actually done in 2008, but I signed on with a publisher, refused to publish it.
Yeah. I'm probably the most hated and ridiculed and censored person in the UFO community, so you're not alone.
I just wait now. Andrew calls this the leper colony. Welcome to the leper colony.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because I've used critical thinking through this whole thing, and I've told people, and I've had experiences that are way outside the box, and actually I've had my own near-death experience, which opens up a whole new program there as well.
Well, I can join you on that.
Yeah, and so, you know, I know, you know, it sounds off. I've met these beings. I know they exist, and I know there's many more dimensions out there that are full of life, and I'm coming from that point of view, but I also have critical thinking saying, okay, this is what I've experienced, but that's all I can tell you is this is my story. This is my experience. I'm not going to...
Mm-hmm.
You know, although we are getting photographs of these beings appearing here now, which is getting pretty interesting, you know, taken by Buddhist monks, you know. So,
yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, so, I mean, but the evidence, you know, that's why I tell people, I said, you know, cameras don't have a belief system. They don't lie.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have multiple witnesses along with several cameras in several different angles, you know, there's something there, and you can't argue that point. So that is a given. Let's just start there, and then we can go off into the other stuff. At least accept that premise, you know. But they still can't even handle that. You know, they keep going.
It's belief systems are tough.
Yeah, and you know they won't even let me speak at the International UFO Congress. I'm censored from there, coast to coast. I'm censored off of coast to coast. Yeah, it's amazing how many people have been.
It's secret, it's confidential. I'll tell you this. I was originally scheduled for coast to coast, and then they called and uninvited me.
You know what?
And I later found out why. They thought she's one of those no planers. We can't have that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You're not alone because they did the same to me. They scheduled me, and then they uninvited me. And then they also did it to Michal Ledwith. Do you know Michal? Do you know who Michal?
Mm-mm.
He used to be an advisor to the Pope, and he broke away from the church because he saw all the nonsense, and he got the true story about what really happened and the ancient history. And so he started coming out with, this is what really happened, and this is where everything got hijacked, and this, you know. And it's really good, but same thing, because George is Catholic. He actually paid money, paid a huge amount of money to him to advertise his books and videos, and at the last minute they called him up and said, nope, you're not coming on.
Mm.
And they didn't even call me. They scheduled me and everything, and I never even got a call, and then I never ended up going on.
Interesting.
So, yeah, and then problem is I put it over my newsletter, which is huge, you know, massive newsletter. I put it out over the newsletter, which we're going to put this out as well. And all these people started just flooding coast to coast saying, what happened? You know, why did you, you know, censor, you know, censor James? And so they got a huge,
influx of email, and then they called me up and they were angry at that, and saying it was my fault. And I just told them, I said, look, I said, I was operating out of 100% integrity. You scheduled me to go on the show. I put out your, I let the people know, my people know, you know, over my list that I was going to come on the show. And up to 2 hours before the show, I was still going on. There was no change in anything. And I said, so, you know, I said, I wasn't the one out of integrity. You know, I followed through, you know, on my end. And you know, there was a lapse of integrity on your side. And so I'm totally censored. I can never go on again.
It's interesting, though, what stuff they have on there. You know, like the plane issue. Well,
yeah.
The planes have never been a thing for me. Mm-hmm. I call it getaway car. You know, that was excuse, the distraction.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, what happened to the building.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who need to think about planes, they can pretend planes hit the buildings. And it people need to say that no planes hit the building, fine. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so I just don't get into that because it turns into an emotional thing. But even when I was on their show, I was kind of like hinted at, you know, don't go there with the planes.
Yeah.
But I would not say, he was trying to get me to state that planes hit the buildings, and I wouldn't state that. I just left it alone.
Yeah.
I'll pick my fights, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to mess with that one.
Exactly.
Because it is a distraction.
Well, you know, in a way, as I was saying before, is that the way these guys operate, they usually have all these variables, and they create a false front, you know, as to what really did happen. And so who knows, they could have flown some planes into the building or whatever at the same time.
Where I come from on that, I don't know anything about planes elsewhere, but, you know, like if such flights actually existed or whatever, but airplanes do not make cookie-cutter cutouts in buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And the cookie-cutter cutout is smaller than the plane. And it doesn't have – it's like a perfect Greg Louganis dive, no splash.
Yeah.
You know, something that goes splat into a wall, it splashes with stuff going out.
Yeah.
And David Henshaw, who's standing right below, he took the picture of the explosion. He didn't see a plane.
Are you talking about the Pentagon or the Trade Center?
The Trade Center.
Yeah. Yeah, I know the Pentagon.
Same with the Pentagon. It's it's same with all locations.
Uh-huh.
It's this myth that people are told of what they're supposed to see or what they're supposed to believe, and you know, there's no plane parts.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's this cookie cutter hole. You know, you've seen NASCAR crashes.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff goes cartwheeling all over the place.
Yeah. But I was just saying, you know, if you guys need a plane, you can have your plane, but that doesn't discount the fact that the building was dustification,
right.
You know, period.
Right.
That's,
I just don't get into it because it is a distraction
that
people argue about, and because they're emotionally invested in it.
Yeah, I'd say you can have your plane, but that doesn't matter. Let's look at what really took the buildings down. You know, if you really need to have your plane, that's okay, you know.
Yeah, but, if a fake plane doesn't do it, neither does a real plane.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
so it doesn't matter.
If you need a plane, we'll get a little radio-controlled device and fly it around and crash into the building, and then we can get back to the.
I do kind of think they had probably had flying spy gizmos there that were checking out what was going on. Like, you know, if somebody was about to pick up a cell phone to call their loved one, they may have aimed more microwaves at them to run them out the window.
Yeah.
Because you know that I think was a big problem. Is people, you know, that big Murdoch thing about you know, spying on family members.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I think they were trying to find out who talked,
mm-hmm.
who listened to their loved ones.
Yeah.
Did their loved ones describe what was going on in there?
Because
mm-hmm. I do know of you know, several conversations, and what was going on in there was wicked.
Yeah, yeah. The whole thing is wicked. I mean, it's crazy. But anyway, it looks like I've got to run. I've got some people standing out here waiting for me.
Oh, cool. Cool. But, well, thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, thank you. And if you want to come back on, you know, we can do part two.
Okay.
Well,
and how much of the book did you read? Or you just paging through it?
Yeah, I've been paging through it and just looking at all the different, you know, the guys falling, the bathtub. I was just going through all the different parts of it, but I'll have to sit down and read it. But, you know.
It's also designed that if you're one who likes to read pictures, you can read pictures. But then if you get desperate to figure out what the description is, you can look at the text.
That's kind of what I've been doing. I went through the chapters because I knew I wouldn't have enough time. So I went through the chapters first, and then I started looking at the pictures, and then I started reading the articles around the picture. So,
but that's cool.
I've kind of gone through it, but I should read the whole thing. But God, time-wise, I'm so swamped
right
now.
But yeah, do like see the probably the biggest meat is in chapter 17 with Hutchison and cold fusion and transmutation. It also Ed Leedskown and it you know with levitating the rocks for Coral Castle.
Mm-hmm.
There's the information is in there to expose the technology. Put it that way.
Yeah, I'll check that one out. I've followed Hutchison's work for some time now, and some of the other stuff. But I was wondering how he levitated the Coral Castle one. I haven't gotten, but I'll read it.
It's not ever explicit, but there is a lesson to learn in this. I'll leave you with this: that you know, understanding that such technology exists has to come before we develop it, free
mm-hmm.
energy, because.
Yeah.
You know, you don't unlock the gun cabinet until people know what those guns in there can do to people.
Yeah.
And this is capable of destroying the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You don't fiddle around with the toys just to see what happens if.
That's Atlantis all over again, you know.
And Ed Leedskown, I believe he knew from growing up, and he came from Latvia, which is near Serbia, mm-hmm. Tesla's country. But I think they grew up, you know, having a respect for this technology, which is why he used it at night when nobody was looking.
Mm-hmm.
He was very careful not, you know, why they don't disclose the secret, because if you don't respect the technology, you shouldn't have it.
Exactly. Well, that's my friend. I have a friend. I can't even mention his name, but he was very high up in the back engineering stuff, and he left. And he actually figured some things out, but he acted like he didn't figure them out. He said, I don't know, this is so far beyond anything I can imagine. He goes, I can't figure it out. And he left, but he did figure it out. But he said that, you know, there's no way I'm going to tell them how this works because these people are crazy. You know?
Yep.
They'll use it in a way that, you know, they'll militarize it and make a weapon out of it and then end up destroying the whole planet. So he said, that's just not going to happen. It's kind of
interesting. That's right. That's how it is. I don't know if you know this. Some of my heritage is Haida. You know, from the Pacific Northwest.
Uh huh.
And you know, I still am in awe of this culture that could live there for 10,000 to 15,000 years without mowing each other down, without you know taking over, you know, without living beyond their means.
Uh huh.
And I think it shows that we can do that.
Yeah, definitely. Yep, that's what we're doing here. We're trying to create a template of a self-sufficient, you know, more of a spiritual community where people are all working in harmony and you know, considering the condition of most of humanity, it's not an easy job, you know.
Right, right.
A lot of healing work has to happen before the end result can come in.
And I think that's where we've got to go.
Yeah, definitely. Alrighty, well, I better get down there. I've got a whole group of people standing out in front of the house here waiting to talk to
okay.
me. I have some counseling they have to do too. So, but anyway, it's awesome talking to you, and we'll stay in touch.
Great, thanks.
All right, take care.
Yep, bye.